Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show, Saturday, January 10th, 2009. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. I will host today, and our topic concerns the following. What should be on the agenda of new PCORA Commission hearings in Congress? Now, by PCORA Commission, we refer just to the fact that after the famous 1929 crash and subsequent crashes, in the Senate of the U.S. in 1932 and 1933, the Banking Committee held hearings on what happened, who was responsible, and the climate was created in which at least three major kinds of regulations, new laws, were put into effect under Franklin Delano Roosevelt during and after 1933. And speaking of crashes, today is an even greater crash we have underway than the famous 1929 event. So last September in 2008, again, and then again in December, Lyndon LaRouche said, "We can't afford to waste any more time right now," referring to all of this bailout insanity and the other things that in months past you see is adding fuel to the fire. LaRouche said, "We need a new PCORA commission with full subpoena powers to get to the bottom of this worst financial debacle in history." And LaRouche said, you know, whether you start with the Madoff Ponzi scheme or other things, the illegal and unregulated activities of the offshore hedge funds, many other things, just get on with it. Now, this past week, as people know, in the United States, the Senate and House of the new 111th Congress reconvened. Even before that, there was a hearing of the full Banking Committee of the House of Representatives. They called it a meeting because they weren't even convened yet. It was Monday, January 5th. And they had a five-hour session on the Madoff Ponzi scheme, but it didn't get off the ground at all. So we have here in the studio, I'm glad to welcome John Hoeffel. Hi, John.
Hi, Marcia.
To really go through what should be done and fast. And from Texas in Houston, we welcome Keisha Rogers. Hi.
Hello, Marcia.
Who is a leader of the LaRouche Political Action Committee out west and the LaRouche Youth Movement based in her place of operations there in Texas. So, John, why don't you start off with either the history or the present day on the PCORA Commission? What should be going on?
All right, well, let's a little background on the PCORA Commission. Now, when at the point in which these hearings occurred, you had the FDR was pushing, well, when he took office, he was pushing for reform. And you had to break the psychology. There was a sort of a sense among many of the population, people looked up at these financiers as very important and powerful people. You know, much as the public in this country did, say, 6 months to a year ago, when you consider these financiers important people to look up to. I think that's largely disappeared now. But so what PCORA set out to do was to haul some of the most prominent financiers in the country in before his committee and to show the American population what a bunch of venal, corrupt, and self-serving idiots they really were. And in doing so, then he helped expose the nature of the system to the American population so that they would then support the efforts by FDR to pass some serious banking reforms. So, for example, J.P. Morgan was hauled up before Congress, and some of his partners and people of Kuhn Loeb and some of these other powerful banks. And it gave the population a real insight into what the system actually was. And the hearings and the laws that resulted from these hearings, then what the importance of all of this is that they brought Wall Street to heel and they established the principle that the government was sovereign and that if the financial institutions were going to operate in the United States, they were going to operate under the rules and regulations set by the government, that they were not above the law. So this was a powerful blow against this imperial financial apparatus, which loves to see itself as above the law. And we have that same problem today. Now, today there are some differences. The financial crisis is much, much worse. That we're past the point where tweaking it and changing a few laws is going to solve the problem. We need much bigger reform. We need to put the system down and come up with a new system. So that situation is different. And we no longer really have the belief in the American population much that these people are, you know, titans to be admired, because I think pretty much everybody's figured out right now, by now, that they're very corrupt. This whole system is corrupt. And so there will be investigations and prosecutions. The danger with investigations and prosecutions is that you go after a few people who are relatively small fry, and you may, you know, hang a few expendable people, but that you don't really get to the core of what the problem is, if you don't really identify what the system is that causes this. Because the thing that everybody has to understand is that it is not a case of a system which has some corrupt people in it. It is the case that the system itself is corrupt. This global monetary system, as run by this Anglo-Dutch-Saudi liberal financial empire, is a criminal apparatus in and of itself. And that has to be the starting point for any serious investigation. That's what you have to go after. So you can see already we begin to get some of the stories that are being published in the newspapers, which purport to explain what happened inside some of these institutions. And what they all do is they all start from the standpoint of, this is an event that occurred inside the institution. That the people inside this institution made these decisions, which then ultimately caused disaster.
You're referring to things, it's happened all around the country. There was a series in the Washington Post on AIG, What Went Wrong.
Yes.
Or Keisha will think of Enron, perhaps, because that was a classic,
yeah.
What went wrong with this one company at one time?
Right. The Enron case is a very good example of how this works. Because at the point in 2001 in which the collapse of Enron was made public, there was a coordinated press campaign led by the Wall Street Journal to point the finger at a specific group of special purpose vehicles inside Enron and a specific group of people inside Enron as the source of the problem. That investigation continued. The Wall Street Journal was hammering at this every day. Other news media operations got in on it. They drove this point home. Then there was a special committee of the board appointed for an internal investigation at Enron. And that committee was assigned to go after specifically the things that the press had identified and not look at other things. So the investigation from the very start was narrowed down to this one specific group. And then when you had the congressional hearings and the prosecutions and hearings were organized along the same route to go after the same thing. So the trail was set, the track for this whole investigation was set almost immediately in the press. And then everybody else followed the script. And so you had the insiders, people like Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay, the heads of the company, and several other people who went to jail or were convicted. You know, Lay died before he went to jail. But what never came out was the rest of the operation. Now, there were two things that got covered up, at least two things. One is that Enron was a bribery machine. And they had been buying off politicians all around the country because their job was to push through deregulation, electricity deregulation. Their job was to act as a battering ram to force deregulation through for the purposes of creating a spot market in electricity along the lines of the spot market in oil, so that the price of electricity could be manipulated and jacked sky high like the price of oil. And that was their job. And all of that was covered up.
It's left in place, in fact.
It's left in place. And the two banks which played major roles in running this whole thing were Lazard and Rothschild, who also played major roles in the creation of the oil spot market internationally. And they got away scot-free. And not only did they get away, but one of the people who was brought in to run the investigation was a former Lazard banker. So this thing was a cover-up from the very beginning. There was a Rothschild man on the board of Enron, and a Lazard guy came in to help do the cover-up. So that's typical of the way these things work. And so after every financial crisis, you have these investigations. They tend to be show trials. I mean, probably the best example of a show trial is the Martha Stewart case.
Okay.
All right. Now, Martha Stewart, from all I can tell, was guilty. But she made a perfect target because, one, she was very high profile, and two, she was, from the standpoint of the financial system, completely irrelevant. So they got a lot of mileage out of putting her in jail, but they didn't do any damage to any of their operations. So, you know, you look at those things, and then you look at the way that, you know, Fortune magazine is putting out a list of people to go after, you know, and that sort of thing. And you can see in all of this coverage that the people who run the financial system are trying to shape the cover-up of the trials that they know are coming. And what we need to do with the new PCORA hearing is to bust that nonsense wide open by going after not just the puppets, but the puppet masters, to ferret out and explain to the American people how this empire works, how they've been sold down the river, and what we can do to restore our national sovereignty and get our economy back on track.
Hi, John.
Yeah.
Just to add, on the Enron situation, I mean, here in Texas, you look back and you look at the history of LaRouche really going after and exposing the Enron situation. Is not just another, scandalous operation of some dirty banking operations or and activities that were not only just ripping off the population, but if you look at Enron, you also have the situation where what we were exposing at the time is that Enron is the model for deregulation policies, which LaRouche has been adamant has to be stopped. The solution that he's put on the table is that you not only have to start with a bankruptcy reorganization, but you have to do away with free trade and globalization and these deregulatory policies. And this is what Enron represented. I mean, you look here in Houston, the model school from Enron was the University of Houston School of Economics, and we call it the Enron School of Economics. And so most of even the educational system is modeled off this principle or basis of teaching that Enron they fostered or exhibited.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, Enron was trained in deregulation in Britain itself. Under the Thatcher government, Enron was brought in to participate in the privatization of electricity in Britain. And the Thatcher government official who ran this was a guy named John Wakeham. And the bank which ran the private side of deregulation in Enron was Rothschild. And so Enron learned the ropes in Britain. And then when Wakeham left office, he was promoted to Lord. He became Lord Wakeham. He joined the boards of both Rothschild and Enron. And he was on the board of Enron. The Thatcher deregulation czar was on the board of Enron when it collapsed. You know, so these aren't just tenuous connections. And Lazard was Enron's longtime investment banker. You know, and this is the way this thing was steered. So you're absolutely right. This was a model for globalization and deregulation. And it comes straight out of Britain.
Well, let me ask, by the way, I want to throw right in here something I didn't say at the beginning, and then continue your train of thought. But this coming week, just 6 days from now, Linda LaRouche will give an international webcast. It's on January 16, and it's at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, United States. And then again, after the inauguration of President Obama, which would be January 20th, LaRouche will have a webcast January 22nd, also at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, United States. And just the kind of things you're bringing out that ought to be done, and referring to the financial collapse, which is worsening by the hour, and the world really going up in flames, as you see in Gaza, people should know, plan on that, organize other people to together to watch and participate in those two webcasts. And you know you can see more and hear more by checking on the website for the LaRouche Political Action Committee, which is www.laRouchePAC.com, LaRouchePAC.com. Now, let's get back to this. Now, John, some know, some don't, that the name Pecora just refers to the, I guess he was the chief counsel for these hearings that went on in 1932-33, named after Ferdinand Pecora, who was an assistant DA in New York City and was a bulldog on these in these hearings, did his homework, did the questioning, was ruthless. So, but it's not as if, hi-ho, silver, you know, we're going to get some weight for some guy. I understand you've just written what should be on the agenda for hearings. So, meaning the different areas, put it that way, that any one of which, if you get into, you're getting into, you just mentioned the empire, the British Empire. So, could you say more about that?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the system itself. You look at, for example, the U.S. financial system, the global financial system, is full of dope money. The illegal dope trade and the money that spins off is one of the cornerstones of the empire. You take a bank like the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, now known as HSBC, which is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, banks in the world today. And it was built on the opium traffic out of Asia, out of Hong Kong. It's what built Hong Kong. Opium built Hong Kong. And then you look at the expansion of the drug trade in Ibero-America, and that was made possible by the expansion of the banking system into the Caribbean, the offshore banking system in the Caribbean, which started with certain Canadian banks that were run by the British being set up as a way of providing for the laundering of the drug money.
So it's like the British banks in Asia.
Yeah. So you set up the facilities to launder the drug money so that the drug trade can flourish. Because the drug trade chokes on its own cash if it doesn't have a significant portion of the banking system devoted to handling the money. And then you look at the resurgence of the heroin traffic in Afghanistan, which is made possible in part by the expansion of the money laundering capabilities in Dubai. You know, so the banking system and the dope trade go hand in hand. Because the dope trade is not really run by people in Afghanistan or Colombia or in Southeast Asia. It's run by the empire, and it has been for hundreds of years. And so you want to go after dope money laundering. Now, all of the big U.S. banks are up to their ears in dope money laundering. And it's not the case that they're being victimized. It's the case that they actively seek that business. They devote considerable resources to it. It's a lucrative business. There's a fight over that business. And so that needs to be investigated. You need to really go into how this dope money business works. And you need to shut the dope money laundering down. You know, and People should go to jail for this. Institutions should be closed down. You know, there should be severe penalties for this because we've got to cut it out. So there's that aspect. And then you look at the offshore banking complexes, like the Cayman Islands, which are designed to, they're imperial sites which are basically outside of the control of nations, so that they can skirt national laws, that they're used basically as points from which to launch financial warfare against nation states. So the role of these offshore banking centers certainly needs to be investigated. There's an investigation in the United States now on the role of the Swiss banks in tax evasion, which, you know, capital flight is always something useful to investigate. But also with this whole question of bank secrecy, because there's a lot of dirty money that flows, as we see with this Madoff affair and its connections into some of these Swiss banks and into HSBC and other things, that there appears to be a significant dirty money component to this thing. You know, so that whole area of it needs to be investigated.
Yeah, this actually came up. Gregory Watts, a congressman from New York State, asked, mm-hmm. in terms of the Madoff Ponzi scheme, what about just ask of the Inspector General of the Securities and Exchange Commission? Well, why don't you just investigate offshore operations of all kinds anyway?
Mm-hmm. And then you look at things like the petrodollar market, in which, due to the creation of the spot market in oil, you have an enormous pool of dollars which build up in Europe, and that pool of dollars then was used to run financial warfare against the United States by this European-centered oligarchy, and to fund speculation and the restructuring of the U.S. and help create the bubble, which is now blown up, because this bubble that was created as financial warfare against the nation. And its collapse is doing precisely what the empire intended it to, which was to blow out the nation. But at the same time, this gives us an opportunity to change policies and to turn this around on them and use this crisis as a chance to restore our national sovereignty and put them through the bankruptcy proceedings instead of having them bankrupt us.
Right. Well, let me ask Keisha this. Keisha, LaRouche, when he said get a new PCORA commission kind of set of hearings going on in Washington, he said that on the state and local level, given the horrible conditions that cities and states find themselves in, I call on my friends in the state legislatures and city councils and the mayor's and the governor's office to contact their congressional delegations and get them to act now, and the incoming Obama administration, it needs to borrow a leaf from FDR. So you're involved in that, right, Keisha?
Absolutely. And you're finding that the case is right now that as the crisis is becoming more and more dire, people are having to put aside their opinions and beliefs about the political situation and the apprehension, the cynicism, and they're having to pick up their pitchforks and fight. And you're seeing, I mean, right now I have to say, you're seeing a wide open response. And I've been organizing for about 5 years now. And the response that we're seeing within the population and certain layers of the local layers of institutions of government, people are in high demand for leadership and solutions. And there's a strong recognition that LaRouche and his economic forecast and policies for the past 40 years have been the only viable and sane solutions to deal with this crisis. And so one of the things that we've been doing, as you mentioned, that there is a national mobilization and drive right now to approach primarily what we've done with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Legislation that LaRouche put forth in 2007, demanding that the Congress adopt this legislation, not only to address the foreclosure crisis and what people would characterize as a housing market crisis, but the fact that, as Mr. LaRouche made very very clear that the entire banking system was disintegrating and is still in the process of disintegrating, and the only solution is to put the system through bankruptcy reorganization and take certain measures of a firewall of protection through freezing foreclosures and protecting the bank. Well, under the organizing efforts of going out into the local layers, the city councils, the state legislatures, you've seen an enormous response of support for that legislation. And so what we have done is to go back and to reinitiate those layers and say, don't close your doors, don't, you know, kind of just hide under the cover because the situation is getting worse. Now is the time more than ever to fight like hell. And so giving them the sense of what we could do with this PCORA commission, and particularly how Roosevelt didn't just decide to go after the bankers and put a few corrupt bankers in prison, but he knew that if he was going to actually succeed at this mission, he was going to have to, as John brought up earlier, organize the population and create a flank within the population that you had the support and the backing of the population on this. This is what LaRouche is recognizing right now, and we're going with this out into the city councils and to the state legislatures. Where the response right now is really on the side of what LaRouche is saying, that there's no other option right now on the table but to initiate the types of drastic solutions and measures that have to be taken right now to deal with this crisis. So as far as it's interesting. I'll give you an example. We actually were here yesterday making several calls to the state legislature, because here in Texas, for the first time in 2 years, the legislature will be opening on next Tuesday. You know, the saying goes here in Texas, I guess, we don't open every year. We don't open every year primarily because back in the days, you would have to have people traveling all over Texas to the state capitol on horseback and so forth. And so I guess they still go with tradition and only open once every 2 years. But now that they're coming back in the session, we're finding that people who we spoke with on the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, certain offices in the state legislature, are calling back saying, I'm so glad to hear that you guys are still on the job. When can we meet? When are you going to be in the Austin area? And it's very interesting because we received, I think, here probably something like 20 confirmations for meetings in the state capitol on next week. And so this is the type of response you're seeing right now for what LaRouche is proposing and for the leadership that we're exhibiting here.
Let me throw something in, Keisha. I don't know if you heard. We got a call from Indiana that the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act resolution has been introduced there this week. That might be the first one of 2009.
All right, excellent.
And you could get a copy. It's SR7. And it's been introduced, and the particular legislator, in line with what you're saying, although it's the economic base is a little different, the legislator is from East Chicago, which is a kind of deindustrialized former leading steel center of the world. And East Chicago's in Indiana, and his name is Lonnie Randolph, and he's a Democrat there. And I think that, just as you say, this is, how many months ago was it, Keisha, that you might hear in Austin, we certainly heard it up in Massachusetts and elsewhere, among people of goodwill who were just too scared to do anything, and they'd say, don't worry, Barney Frank's going to do something, right? Do you remember that?
Exactly.
I think that's history now, right?
Well, it absolutely is. And, you know, even with the population, people who are not in so-called institutions of government, in the city council, so forth, you know, we're going out to them and saying, well, don't just wait to see what's going to happen. You have to get your pitchforks and be ready to demand leadership, to fight, and to also understand the historical precedent that got us into this position in the first place, so that you will know what to do and how to respond to the crisis. And it, I'll tell you one thing is, this past, just a few days ago, we went out to a site to organize it within the population. And this is a place that I had gone to maybe a year and a half ago. And you couldn't find anybody, anything moving out there but the tumbleweeds. And it was amazing that, you know, first of all, it's an area that's right in the center of the Hurricane Ike disaster, because people, if people remember, we did just have Hurricane Ike here in Texas that destroyed a very large area of Texas, particularly in Galveston and other parts of Houston and so forth. And so now these people are left in a situation right now where, as the economic crisis even worsens, that they are really seeing the crunch and being hit by it. So, you know, you just had people marching up to the table. One gentleman, he saw politics, and he said, "Oh, I'm not political. You know, look at the situation we're in. Nobody's doing anything." And we said, "But LaRouche is doing something." And he said, he made a 360, and he said, "Oh, LaRouche, my God, where have you guys been?" And so, you know, these are the types of responses. And, you know, throughout the entire day, you would see people just marching up to the table. "How can I help? Let me go to my car because I don't have any money, but I'm going to go find something for you guys because you guys have to keep fighting." So that's to give, you know, people a real sense of optimism that right now what Len and what the youth movement and the ideas that we're presenting and putting forth, you know, people are really responding to them and realizing that there is hope, that, you know, we don't have just the, you know, bankers and so forth, and the big British operations that are going to do whatever they want to do, and you can't do anything about it, because this PCORA commission really gives you a sense that you actually can do something about this, and it's not just you know, above people's heads, that they can actually be a part of making sure that these type, that the British imperial system doesn't get away with the killings and so forth that they're putting forth on the population, and the drastic policies, economic policies that are looting nations right now, that we can actually change that if we just educate the population.
Right, and people should know, people who might be listening to this by telephone message line later, or people on our, of course, the LaRouche Pub website where we're broadcast, that there is a video about this PCORA Commission approach, know what your enemy is and do something about it, that has been made by the LaRouche Youth Movement, and it's on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, which I gave before, LaRouchePAC.com. So people should see that. They certainly should give their remaining money some meaning and subscribe to EIR online and go ahead and give it to LaRouchePAC.com. That's the way to look at it.
Pete's giving it to J.P. Morgan Chase.
That's right.
You know, but it's funny because it is this British system, this Anglo-Dutch liberal system, which has in fact collapsed. You know, it's the line is that this was the failure in the United States, that it was our subprime crisis and all of that, which is all more of this banker's nonsense to try to run the cover-ups. But their system has failed, and their system has failed spectacularly. And so rather than bailing out their system, I mean, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson has done one thing right. And that was to come out and tell the American people, this system is dead. And everything he did after that was wrong. But to come out and say the truth was very good for us. Because this is precisely what we had been saying, that this system is finished. And now here was the Treasury Secretary coming out and saying, the world is about to end unless I get an unlimited amount of money to bail out this thing.
By the way, I think this weekend, the White House is packaging up its request for an additional $350 billion.
Yeah, and the $300, of course, this whole discussion about the $700 billion is itself a distraction.
Uh-huh.
Because so far they've spent or promised or committed well over $8 trillion to this thing. And
you want
that's
to review? It has about seven categories, and they all went wild?
Well, it's, you know, it's the bailout package of the week.
Okay.
You have, they started out with this $40 billion loan program in December of 2007. And they said, this $40 billion, this is going to get the banking system through the end of the year. That's going to solve the problem. We're going to be okay. Well, they've lent out about $1.8 trillion through this $40 billion program so far.
The temporary auction.
This temporary
thing.
Program, yeah. Then they created another in March. They announced that they were creating a new loan facility to lend to investment banks. And before that loan facility could even take effect, you had the Bear Stearns crisis, at which point they had to create an even newer loan facility that could go into effect right away to loan money to the investment banks. So they created two facilities to loan money to the investment banks in March. And that got them through. And, of course, they were continually expanding this term auction facility, more and more money all the time. And then in September, the whole bottom completely fell out. That was when Lehman Brothers collapsed and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were bailed out and AIG collapsed, the collapse of the credit default swaps market. And this was the month that Paulson then said, okay, we've got to bail out everything. And since then, there's been no illusion that everything is okay. But the problem is that they've gone exactly the wrong direction, and they've been bailing everything out, throwing money at it. This hasn't worked because this, you know, even after all of these trillions of dollars that they spent, they still had to launch an extraordinary bailout for Citigroup. And there are other of these bailouts coming. You know, they've had these shotgun marriages, these mergers. You know, and now we're on the verge of finding out what they're willing to admit happened at the end of the year in the fourth quarter. And it's going to be.
You mean individual entities still standing are supposed to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So these big banks are going to have to admit their results. It's going to be one of two things. Either they're going to admit enormous losses, you know, $10 billion, $50 billion at an institution, or they're not going to do that. Now, the losses are there. The losses are much greater than the $10 billion or $50 billion. The real losses are in the trillions. But if they announce big losses, that's going to be another shock to the system. But the even worse thing, actually, is if they don't announce the big losses, because that means they're so bankrupt that they can't even admit this little portion of what they've lost. So we'll see pretty soon which way they're going to go. But this whole system is, as Paulson said, finished. But also, this bailout operation is now finished. And the Obama team coming in is going to have to take a different approach, whether they know it or not. Because they're probably preparing a consensus. They're going to try to give a little bit to the bankers. They're going to go a little bit our way. They're going to try to please everybody and have a consensus about how to approach it. And that's going to fail. And this thing is just getting worse all the time. The system itself is liquidating. It's vaporizing. And you have now a situation in which you have this deflation of financial assets where values are just disappearing. And to make up for it, they're pumping in money at an accelerating rate. So you have the worst of both worlds. You have the deflation of assets and the inflation and hyperinflation of monetary aggregates on top of a physical economy, which is just the bottom has dropped out. So that's the situation they're going to be faced with. And none of these maneuvers that they've announced so far is going to solve that. They're going to have to come up with something new. And we've got the only thing that is new that will actually work.
Right. Well, one thing to underscore what you've said and Keisha's referred to when she says the mood in the public is this is impossible, these guys are bums. But we have a situation around the United States, certainly around the world, but let's stick here, where as of January now, the new year, you have Revenues collapsed in the state and local level. School districts can't pay for things. The state of Michigan, I think, has been borrowing from the federal government because it cannot pay its unemployment compensation. South Carolina is on the way to do that. The physical and social economic conditions of people is impossible. Keisha, is there anything that stands out in your mind in that way in Texas or not? Or is it just the people's across the board job loss, housing loss, inability to buy food? What's it look like?
Yeah, I think it is across the board, and I think the crunch is really coming down on people. And, you know, like I said, people's apprehension and the way people responded to the crisis before is starting to change, and they're realizing their survival and survival of their children and grandchildren depend on what they do and how they respond now, and that they're realizing they cannot afford to sit back and wait to see what's going to happen and sit back and not do anything. So I think here in Texas, particularly as all over the place, I mean, with the fact that you've had over half a million jobs lost within a month's time, I think the record level now is like something like within the past year or something, 11 million jobs. People are finding themselves having to take responsibility. And especially here in Texas, like I said, with the, you know, recent hurricane disaster, you know, and it was a reflection of what we saw in terms of the response from the government in Hurricane Katrina, that if there's not a demand for a real drastic change in the economic policies, which do not include Paulson's insanity of a bailout, but to go with LaRouche's bankruptcy reorganization, then there's going to be little chance of survival if we don't. So you're getting the responses that people have to act.
Well, you've got another disaster coming up in Texas here pretty shortly, Keisha. George Bush is coming back.
Oh, no. I heard he was going up to Virginia.
He might fit in here.
Yeah, what you say, certainly about what you said about Hurricane Ike, take a place like Iowa. You know, its capital was underwater and thousands had to be evacuated only 6 months ago. Well, there's no credit for them. There's no money for them. The federal government announced there's no money for these cities that were completely underwater, and the Mississippi River, the Missouri River. So it's just an example of if reality hitting very fast.
They have to become a bank.
Like GMAC or like, right. Well, let me ask you another thing. Getting back to what should be on the agenda. You mentioned offshore operations at large, the drug money side of everything else. Could you just review again, too, these changes in banking laws per se that have been spectacular when you step back and look at the whole planet in the last, 10 years that just allowed for this openly?
Yeah. I mean, it started basically, you could date it to the 1980s.
Okay.
Where you had the changes in the tax laws and in banking regulation, which opened up the savings and loan industry for looting.
So that they could be bought out or...
So they could be bought out and then start engaging in these more speculative activities. And then what happened with that is that the hot money flooded in.
This is the Milken era.
Yeah, the Milken era. So you had the dope money coming in and taking over some of these S&Ls. And then these S&Ls, in order to attract money, were offering higher deposits, higher interest rates on deposits. And so they were attracting capital. They were taking in these brokered deposits. They started making all kinds of loans. They were buying junk bonds. And so this completely transformed the economics of the S&Ls, because the S&Ls were basically designed to make home loans. And they would make 30-year loans at low interest rates, which means that they had to pay out their depositors even lower interest rates. And so as soon as you introduce this instability of this fast money crowd into this, paying higher rates, then the S&Ls, which didn't want to get into the fast money, were at a significant disadvantage, and they started losing money, and these SNLs started having to pay higher rates for their deposits than they were getting on the loans they had made, and the whole system just blew completely up. But it blew up by design because the imperial fast money crowd, this was a way to blow up the U.S. economy. So this is how they got in the door. This is what the Milken operation was. It did the same thing, funding corporate raiders and things like that. This was drug money. And this was the beginning of the transformation. And since that period, there's been consistently rolling back all of these protections that were put into place under FDR to make the system stable and rational, culminating with the repeal in 1999 of Glass-Steagall, but by which point Glass-Steagall itself was dead, even though it was still on the books, because the government refused to enforce it. The classic case of that is the Travelers Citicorp merger, which was illegal, just flat illegal under the law. And when they announced it, the press conference announcing this merger should have qualified as a conspiracy under the federal conspiracy statutes. And the two CEOs of these institutions, when they held the press conference, were actually guilty of breaking federal conspiracy laws. But of course, they weren't punished, because when the banks get into trouble, it's always the country that gives way. Whatever the banks need, we have to make sure they're okay. And that's the problem. That's what needs to go. So you need, in a PCORA hearing, you need to investigate this whole question of the deregulation, to lay out how this thing was done.
Now we're talking about deregulation of banking per
yes,
se.
Yes, deregulation of
and
banking.
And otherwise, you already went through electricity, mm-hmm. deregulating every aspect of how an yeah. economy should function.
And the related changes in the tax structure.
Okay.
Which favored speculation over investment in real things. And so we have to look at the history of how this thing happened, and not just at who in the government voted for these things, but how these things were politically organized and where the money came from that paid for the campaigns and all of that. And you take that through, starting with the Milken operations, and take it all the way through the creation of the derivatives markets and the role of the hedge funds, like people like George Soros, in all of this. And one of the common themes through this whole process is the role of Lazard and Felix Rowan.
Okay, so get the figures. Felix Rowan.
Yeah, Felix yeah. Rowan, who probably is as guilty as any man alive for what's happened here, because he played a major role in restructuring Wall Street in the 70s and then in pushing this whole mergers and acquisitions business, which is called mergers and acquisitions, but it was actually the beginning stages of building of these giant globalized cartels, which are now running large parts of the world. And so you have to look at that and how this whole shift from an industrial economy to a post-industrial information age finance and speculation dominated economy occurred. And if you pull on those threads, that will lead you directly into the heart of the empire. And that's what we need to do. We need to show the American people how this whole thing worked.
Right. I think you made it crystal clear about this whole sweep of this. And really, you're getting at whatever particular pathway you normally choose. It gets at the empire, the international globalization. Do you want to say anything, though, specifically, as Mr. LaRouche raised, too? Or you can go at it. Not or, but inclusive in this, there is the Madoff Ponzi scheme. There are other particulars. One of them, for example, what's called the BAE scandal over the years. You could mm-hmm. start with that, and you right away get into money arrangements for use by this international imperial gang.
Well, if you look at the Madoff scandal, and sort of forget about the question of the Ponzi scheme. I think there's a lot of disinformation there.
Okay.
But if you track back who's running this operation, you get very quickly that one of the dominant forces in this Madoff operation was this Swiss bank called Union Bank Privée. Now, one of the interesting things about Union Bank Privé is that this is where you went if you wanted to invest money in George Soros' hedge funds. That this Union Bank Privé operation is very closely tied, as is Soros, to the Rothschild banking apparatus, which serves as sort of a focal point for the dirty money operations of the empire. Now, where did Felix Royten go after he left Lazard? Well, he went to Rothschild for a while, and then he was deployed to Lehman Brothers. You know, so this little nest of dirty money financiers that were involved in creating the Milken operation, that were involved in creating things like Enron, that were involved in creating these giant hedge funds, that are involved in creating things like Madoff. And that's what you go after. You go after these puppet masters, the people who are setting all of these things into motion, knowing that at some point they're going to blow up. And then as soon as they blow up, they sort of fade into the background and let the things that you see get investigated. So that's what we have to go after. And this is a tight little nest of people. And they show up everywhere at the scenes of all these disasters. You find traces that they've been there. So we need to nail them. And if we nail them, we go a long way towards solving the problems we face today.
Right. One thing let me ask you that I'm going to answer it myself and then you correct it, okay? Because some of these characters on stage still, I think the head of BP Exxon I noticed in the last few days or so, that are part of this international apparatus, they still come along in their briefcase and they pull out things. We're going to have a carbon tax. We're going to cap and trade in carbon rights. We're going to set up something in Chicago. Now, this is being blown away about the fact that whole cities don't have money to buy chlorine to treat their water. We have thousands of people out of work. We have people in places around the world starving, but they're still at it. What do you say?
I think that plunging into a new dark age is probably going to adversely impact their business model.
Okay.
I don't think they quite realize that yet.
So they've been wound up and they're continuing.
They're like the dinosaurs wandering around after the climate's changed, wondering, how come we're not ruling things anymore?
Keisha, you know what I mean when I'm saying that. Sometimes you hear these. I wanted to ask you one thing about Texas in particular, or out west. We've had several months of the campuses, the students, and I think you were doing a lot of work on some of them this fall.
Yes.
Being in the midst of this historic breakdown situation, right? Can you say something about that? What are they...
Well, one of the things about the campuses is, you know, what we've tried to do in terms of generating the types of responses and leadership you need, because it's to actually generate, like, discussion groups, and we've started several clubs on the various campuses, LaRouche Democrat clubs, LaRouche Society clubs on some of the major campuses here in Texas, and the objective is to really get people get the students to discuss these solutions and to be aware of what's going on. And, I mean, going back, looking at the fact that, you know, like you said, state budgets are completely collapsed right now. States don't have money. City governments don't have money. So people, especially students, are seeing, you know, strong effects around the fact that you have a situation where tuition is up beyond belief right now. And so they're responding to the crisis and wanting to know what to do. And I think right before the semester ended, for the Christmas and the holiday break, we had a real open response from the student population to want to actually get more involved and figure out what we're doing. So once school opens back up on the 20th of this year, of this semester, we're going to be ready to go in and actually educate them on LaRouche's economics of physical science through mastery of the works of Kepler, which we've been doing a lot of work on Johannes Kepler and his discoveries of the planetary orbits and harmonic orderings. We've been doing a lot of work on the music work, because what we emphasize to people is that it's not only understanding these economic policies and the leadership that has to be taken, but the question is, how are you going to get a population out of the mentality of just being dumbed down and going into a dark age, but to actually have a population that's ripe for a renaissance? So the music work that we've been doing across the nation and have actually worked through here in Texas as well as all over the country and various other youth locals is going to be very important. The science work is very important to move the population, because right now most people need is they need a lot of humor, they need irony, and that's something that we really have to work to try to convey to get people a sense of how to deal with this crisis, because other than that, people would just respond in a way that they're very apprehensive, or I don't have to do anything because I'm going to wait on someone else to do it. So you have to make fun of their axioms and their way of thinking, and especially with students. My parents take care of everything, but now their parents are telling them, well, honey, I can't buy you that new car that you wanted because I just lost several hundred thousand dollars in a stock market or something. Oh, they're listening.
Right. And one other question about Texas. Are you not to restrict you to only
that? Yeah, you have to understand. John is the Texas expert.
Oh, okay. But right now, with the whole border situation, with the mass throwing people into unemployment, and so many displaced Mexicans, people from El Salvador, everywhere else, all across mm-hmm. the United States, in Texas in particular, that's part of the situation you're dealing with, right?
Absolutely. And as LaRouche's and as John's actually brought up and reemphasized here, that if we don't approach the question, if we don't address the fact that the economic crisis and the drug trafficking crisis here in Texas, here across the border, right across the border in Mexico, is a London-run George Soros operation, and really get that across to people, then we're never going to be able to deal with the crisis. Just to, I had a activist call me up yesterday and say, well, ministers in Houston here want you guys to come and address them on the fact that there is a high level of gang violence and drug activity. Want you to address them on the fact that, there's high levels of black-on-black crime and so forth emerging. And I said, well, if you don't address, the problem is you're thinking about it too small. You have to get to the core of the problem. The core of the problem is George Soros and the fact that if nations, as LaRouche has emphasized, do not take on this drug trafficking question, they're never going to be able to sustain as a sovereign nation. And we can't allow for these guys just to kind of take control and get away. So you have to go after the London-backed drug trafficking operations. And I think that's what John expressed a little bit earlier here.
Right. So, John, we'd see George Soros in the hearing dock here, Felix Rohatyn. What about Warren Buffett? What about who?
We have enough jail space to take care of all of these people. as LaRouche said the other day, you don't break the back of this thing by putting a few oligarchs in jail. You put all of them in jail.
Okay.
Now, I think we should set some of them aside, set up a theme park. Gark World
in Texas,
or something
probably,
like that.
Yeah, right. Gark World.
Set up a Gark Park so that, for successive generations, we can take our children there. We can show, look at this medieval fantasy world that these people used to, that this is how the world used to be ruled.
Okay.
So they could get a sense of it. And so that we make sure that we never make that mistake again. But that's where they belong. They belong in the zoo. Some of them in jail.
Our sign said, who goes to jail first, Madoff or Paulson? And people said, well, send all the crooks. Why do we have to make a decision?
An open door to jail.
That's right.
Open door policy.
Throw them all in jail and sort it out later.
Well, we've reached the end of this hour on this subject, on this positive note. And I urge everyone again to contribute, to look at the, to go to LaRouchePAC.com and see this PCORA Commission LPAC TV, see everything else there that's breaking news, and for sure, January 16 and also January 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, United States, look at LaRouchePAC.com for Mr. Lyndon LaRouche's two international webcasts on what the strategic situation is and what must be done about it. And also, on January 17th, again, we'll be back with the weekly LaRouche Show, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, and either then or the week after, take up this whole, in particular, George Soros' world drug terrorism threat right now, and that we're going to do, that we're going to end. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much, Keisha Rogers and John Hoeffel, and we're signing off January 10th from the LaRouche Show.
Thank you.